Case number 26-7050. National Association of Home Builders of the United States et al. Appellants versus District of Columbia. Mr. Little for the appellants, Mr. Roberts, amicus curiae, Mr. Leach for the appellant.
All right, Mr. Little, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Mark Little on behalf of plaintiff appellants. Everyone agrees that the district couldn't set a one BTU a year energy use limit in its building code. That would be a classic energy conservation standard that EPCO would clearly preempt. The only difference here is that instead of setting that limit at one, the district set it at zero. By prohibiting gas combustion, the district's Clean Buildings Act operates as a zero BTU a year energy use standard. And that remains the case regardless of how you read the term energy use. So even taking the district's view of that term, treating it as a fixed quantity that shows how much energy a product will use during a representative use cycle, well, then no appliance with an energy use rating over zero BTU a year can be used under the Clean Buildings Act. That is no appliance.
To me, counsel, that the implication of your argument is that the district or any state government can never ban a covered appliance, because you would interpret that as setting the energy use to zero, and it would be preempted by EPCA. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if that's quite correct, Your Honor, and let me explain where I think the difference might be. The EPCA preemption provision, of course, says it preempts all regulations concerning the energy use or energy efficiency of a product. So if you have some type of regulation that happens to ban some, say, models of some covered products, but it's not doing so based on energy use, energy efficiency. For instance, if there's a decibel limit that happens to ban certain models of certain products, I think generally that's not going to be preempted because it's regulatory metric, its regulatory trigger isn't energy use, isn't energy efficiency, and it really wouldn't be operating like a energy conservation standard. Whereas here,
so what if a state or a local government like DC wanted to ban certain microwaves in certain locations because they use too much energy and they will short out the system? They can't do that because that's like setting it to zero. A ban is like setting it to zero.
I think in Your Honor's hypothetical, that generally would be preempted. Again, if I could clarify where I think some of the play in the joints here would be. We know the kinds of regulations EPCA applies to. It applies to manufacturer-facing regulations telling manufacturers what they can make, what they can sell. It applies to building codes. Once we get beyond that, I do think there's at least a question of, is this generally the kind of regulation EPCA is going to apply to? But certainly if the district or any state said, look, we think that microwaves are using too much energy, we want to kind of set a lower standard or to ban all microwaves using more than a certain amount of energy, yes, I think that falls within kind of the core of EPCA's preemption provision.
So I guess a lot of, for example, schools will ban microwaves, though, for various reasons, in dorms. So you would say that the students have a federal right to have a microwave because it's like setting microwaves to zero, and that's preempted by EPCA.
So I think that is just a fundamentally different setting where it's not making a building code. It's not kind of having this legal prohibition. That's more of a
what is the legal prohibition based on energy use?
But I actually think it's more of a landlord-tenant relationship. As in, a building owner can kind of decide what it wants to do in its own buildings. That really doesn't implicate preemption or anything like that.
Say it's a state university.
In that case, I think there would be a question about is that the kind of proprietary, you know, function that qualifies as state action or not? Is that a regulation that would qualify for EPCA preemption?
Say it's a regulation.
Certainly, yes.
State universities.
I think EPCA is very clear that you cannot have regulations concerning energy use or energy efficiency.
What I'm getting at is that this kind of legal fiction you've constructed, which is that this is setting things to zero, because of course the DC building code before us is not setting anything to zero. You're saying it has the effect of, and I'm just kind of exploring this idea of the effect of. It seems like any ban has the effect of setting energy use to zero.
On that, Your Honor, I want to be pretty clear on where I think at least the target is for when we're talking about preemption. And I think the Supreme Court has said in so many words that we want to look at the operation and effect. We want to look at what the state law does, how the state phrases its regulation, even what the state's, you know, intent, whether it's acting for the best reasons. None of that really matters. And in practice, the other side has yet to explain how this operates any differently than if the district had written rather than no on-site gas combustion, no gas appliance with a energy use rating over zero BTU a year could be used. And if that's right, if it's operating just like a zero BTU a year energy use standard would be, then it's preempted. That's a classic energy conservation standard. Just like if the district had said, look, you can have gas appliances, but only those that meet a 100 BTU energy use standard. I don't think we would even have that case if that's how the district wrote its law, because that would be so clear a case of EPCA preemption. And here again, in operation and effect, which is how we should be looking at this.
Your argument is that it doesn't matter how the district writes its law, as long as it has the effect that you posit.
Well, I think that's...
It has to matter how the district writes its law.
Well, it matters in some instances. It matters how the regulation triggers, how it scales. Is that tied to energy efficiency? How it phrases its law, mere semantics. Again, I think the Supreme Court has said in so many words that preemption isn't a matter of semantics. So whether the district writes this as, you can't use gas appliances, you can only use gas appliances with a zero BTU, your energy use rating, you can't combust gas. For preemption purposes, those all are the same thing because their operation and effect is all the exact same. I think if you look at...
Can I ask you about, there's this example of New York's ban on kerosene heaters in apartment buildings. It sounds like on your view, that would be preempted, right?
Well, I don't think it would be preempted. So no, but it's because there is no federal energy conservation standard for kerosene heaters. So EPCA preemption only attaches that. If there were, then a building code provision saying you can't have indoor kerosene heaters, that would be preempted. If we're talking about a type of restriction on kind of certain places within buildings kerosene heaters could be used, I think that would be a closer question, because again, I think there are really two axes that we should evaluate EPCA preemption questions on. One is whether they're using energy use, energy efficiency as the metric, as a trigger. And then two is, is this the kind of general regulation? Is it a manufacturing regulation? Is it a building code? I think kind of restrictions within buildings at least gets one step beyond that. So there's probably a question about whether
it would just be a narrower version of a zero energy use requirement on your view.
No, I agree with that, Your Honor. And right. And to be very clear, that would be a regulation concerning energy use, energy efficiency in the kind of broadest sense. But I do think that it's worth, at least when we get into some of the broader hypotheticals, to step back and consider, is this the kind of law that Congress had in mind? Because again, we know building codes, we know manufacturer facing regulations, but there are many, many other types of laws that might have some connection to energy use, energy efficiency. And while we have to evaluate, is this really tied to energy use? Is it really triggering based off? Like, of course, this regulation here, the entire regulatory trigger is gas energy use. I think we also have to evaluate what kind of law it is. And if you look at this law, this is a building code, so there's really no question that just generally this is the kind of thing that it could apply to, right? And then when you look at what it does, it's, again, setting an energy conservation standard. And if EPCA applies to anything, and I think this is an uncontroversial proposition, it's going to apply to energy conservation standards promulgated in building codes. And then I think the only question for your honors is, well, is a ban on gas combustion the equivalent of a zero BTU a year energy use standard? And I think when you look at its operation and effect, which again is where we should be looking, there's really no daylight between how those two would work. Now, I agree.
The competing, what DC would say is that what Congress had in mind here was a standard that would require manufacturers to redesign their product so it can be sold. I understand the framing, but nobody would ever say DC has passed a law that says you can use your gas appliance in DC so long as it uses zero energy. That's just a fundamentally unnatural thing to say. It's a ban. And Congress could have written this preemption provision to cover laws that impair the availability or that prohibit the sale of a covered product, but it didn't do that. So you have to at least admit it's a very unnatural way to regard a ban, to say, no, no, you should think of that as you can sell it, but only if it doesn't use any energy.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think that's how every energy conservation standard works. Wherever we draw that, you know, cutoff, it's you can perhaps sell something.
Was that one or 100 or 1,000?
Exactly.
Then it would be a preempted standard. If it's a ban on the sale of a product, right? Do you think that the district could just say all clothes dryers are hereby prohibited in the District of Columbia?
The district certainly couldn't say all gas clothes dryers or all electric clothes dryers. I think it probably also just couldn't say all clothes dryers. Why I make that distinction is I think the closer to the tie to energy
because use. Because mine efficiency. Wouldn't tie on energy use.
As closely. I'm not saying it would necessarily come out the other way, but I do think that's one step. If I could direct your
Wait, I'm honor, sorry, I want, you to continue that. You said the district cannot ban dryers if it wishes to do so? Because that seems to me extraordinary.
Here's what I'm confident on, Your Honor, and then I'll tell you why I become less confident. I'm confident that the district couldn't say you can't have gas clothes dryers. That's banning based on energy use. That's setting an effective zero energy use limit. If the district's just
isn't that extraordinary? Like the district can't say we can't have gas dryers, and you're relying on a law that really, I mean, you are claiming a pretty extraordinary result from language that does not at all clearly require that result.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is the core of EPCA, and I think this at least everyone agrees with, is that the district couldn't set some energy conservation standard for clothes dryers, right? Couldn't say 1,000 BTUs or
Let's stick with the ban.
Like
why can't they just ban?
Right, because that's simply the most extreme version of that, right? Any energy conservation standard
but see,
is going
to... the alternative
to,
is that your interpretation is incorrect, right? Then they can't ban the clothes dryers and it's not setting energy use to zero and the district or all states, this would apply to all states, retain their right to legislate as they see fit. They retain their police power.
That is the alternative, Your Honor, but what I would emphasize here is that any energy conservation standard, how it operates just in practice, is it bans everything that, you know, doesn't meet that conservation standard. So
instead of 1,000, the alternative is this is not an energy conservation standard.
A ban on gas
might not be an energy conservation standard.
I would point, Your Honor, to one of the exceptions to EPCA preemption for this idea of whether bans are covered, and it's 6297B(4) and (c)(1). It's the same exception. And it's a specific exception for bans on the use of pool heaters with a constant burning pilot. Now, why am I bringing this up? Obviously, we're not talking pool heaters. We're not talking constant burning pilots. But Congress wrote in a specific exception to cover a ban. And unless that's just pure surplusage, Congress certainly thought that EPCA extended to at least some bans.
Isn't it the opposite, though? If EPCA has a provision that talks about one particular ban, it was talking about that. It probably doesn't mean you can never ban anything. That's a much broader proposition. And if they're specifically talking about one ban and they meant to never allow any bans, why wouldn't they have just said so?
Well, it's an exception. So I agree. The import of the exception is that this kind of ban will be allowed, as in it would otherwise be preempted, but we're making a special exception for it. But then I think that means that, well, EPCA preemption certainly extends to bans, or else why are we making exceptions for bans? Your Honor, I would say if the court doesn't see it the way I do regarding energy conservation standards and a ban effectively being a zero, the other route to EPCA preemption, which I think is fairly independent of much of this reasoning, is what the Ninth Circuit said in the Berkeley case. Berkeley really didn't go down this energy conservation standard route. Is a ban zero? Berkeley said, look, we're going to look at the term energy use. We know that at least in some other places in EPCA, Congress used energy use to mean real world energy use. Again, I think that's an uncontroversial proposition.
So I think maybe we would have the same idea based on the Berkeley case and your briefing. The definition of energy use for EPCA is the quantity of energy directly consumed by a consumer product at point of use determined in accordance with test procedures under Section 6293 of this title. And it seemed to me that the Berkeley decision kind of ignored that last phrase, determined in accordance with test procedures. And it seems that your definition also ignores that, because the test procedure provision seems to indicate that they're talking very specifically about the representative average use cycle or period of use, like for the product. And it completely, it seems very inconsistent with your reading of energy use. I'd like you to explain how this definition fits in with your analysis.
Of course. So two things. One, I think most of what we've been talking about this morning really doesn't turn on how I read energy use, because I was accepting for the sake of argument that we're talking about a fixed quantity. For the kind of Berkeley argument, I agree that does turn on energy use. I also agree there is a statutory definition of energy use, and that statutory definition certainly does refer to a fixed quantity. My argument here is that if you look at 6292B2, 6295L1, both of those use the term energy use in EPCA, and they use the term energy use in EPCA when they're telling the Department of Energy kind of what its outer limits of its powers are, when it can promulgate energy conservation standard. It's based on how much energy use there is. And again, I think everyone agrees that at least those examples of energy use are not a fixed quantity, because the sentences wouldn't make sense. So my only point here is, yes, it is a high bar to overcome a statutory definition, but in this statute, we know Congress used energy use in two different ways. When we look at the preemption provision, much like in those other provisions, it is demarcating the outer bounds of EPCA. And so it makes some sense to think that Congress meant energy use in its common parlance.
But what are the two different ways?
Sure. So one is energy use can mean this fixed quantity, as in there's a label on your gas dryer that says it uses 1,000 BTUs per year under normal operating conditions. The other way just means energy use in the real world, as in I cook something on my gas stove, so I use energy.
What are the two ways in the statute that Congress used energy use?
Oh, yes, of course. The supplied statutory definition is that fixed quantity. There are a few other provisions, 6292B2, 6295L1, that use the term energy use. And I think it very clearly applies to kind of real-world energy use, because it just doesn't make sense in terms of the fixed quantity.
Why doesn't it make sense?
It is talking about when the Department of Energy can issue energy conservation standards, and it hinges on when the total energy use for a product reaches some figure, such that if we're talking about a fixed quantity, it just doesn't work. And again, I think my friend on the other side agrees with that premise, although he can correct me if I'm wrong.
Why wouldn't we apply the statutory definition whenever we can?
Well, I think when you have a statute, when
because
Congress
this
is,
definition does work with the provision that we're looking at, which is the preemption.
Sure, I agree that applying the statutory definition wouldn't kind of like break the preemption provision or make it nonsensical. But I think when you have a statute, when Congress has shown that it's not strictly adhering to the statutory definition, then it makes some sense to think about what version of that definition would work better in this context. And here,
what do you mean by work better? Like, what would be your test for? So we have a statute. It has a definition for energy use. You're saying sometimes we should use it and sometimes we shouldn't. It seems to me that we are obligated to use it whenever we can. And we can use it in this preemption provision. What is your alternative view of when we use a statutory definition that's provided in a statute?
Sure. I think when you have a statutory definition that's provided in a statute, and I think this is an important limiting principle, there are examples of Congress clearly departing from that statutory definition, that the question no longer becomes, or that the analysis no longer becomes, is there any way possible for us to apply the statutory definition? Rather, the analysis becomes which definition fits more naturally.
What's your
in
authority
this phrase?
For that? Because it seems to me that we're interpreting statutes all the time and we apply the statutory definition.
Sure.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Yes, right. The Supreme Court in the Utility Air Regulatory Group case, I know, departed from a statutory definition there, and I don't have the language in front of me.
I'm not saying that we don't occasionally have to depart from a statutory definition because of whatever impossibility or whatever it is. But in general, we apply the statutory definition.
That is the default rule.
There's no barrier to us applying the statutory definition here.
It is certainly possible to apply the statutory definition here. I agree with you.
In the preemption clause.
It is possible. It would not make it legally incoherent. Whether it's the most kind of natural reading, I think the Ninth Circuit thought that it was not, and I do too, but.
You know, one thing I don't understand about your presentation is that in your reply brief, you don't even mention the Second Circuit's opinion, let alone try to distinguish it. What's the strategy behind that?
Sure. So the Second Circuit's opinion, I think, used the same type of reasoning that many of the opinions leading up to it did in the district courts. And really the key problem with a lot of those opinions, which I believe we said in the reply brief, but if I didn't, I didn't, is that none of them grapple with what is the lead argument I've made this morning, that a ban is effectively a zero BTU a year energy use standard. That's simply the court never joins issue on that, on what I think is the kind of easiest.
It's nice of you to say now, but none of that is in your reply brief. And the Second Circuit's case was decided a month before you even filed it. And I just don't understand why you didn't even mention it, let alone try to distinguish it.
I could be wrong, Your Honor, but I thought in the reply brief that we said none of the extant cases had dealt with the zero BTU or your energy standard. But if I didn't, I didn't.
Yeah.
I think there's two related ways of looking at this case. One is, should you view a ban on fuel type as covered by this preemption provision? And another one, which we've been talking about, is should you use the statutory definition or sort of what you would say is the colloquial definition of energy use?
Agreed.
And so I think I just want to make sure we have our list of reasons why we should think of it your way. And so far, what we've heard that I have is this idea that one BTU versus zero, that line wouldn't make any sense. And you referenced B4. Is there anything else in the statute that you would want us to consider as evidence that Congress wanted this much more muscular version of preemption?
At a general level, I think it's pretty telling that the preemption provision expanded quite a bit over time. It began as in 1975 as an energy efficiency standard or similar requirement. It changed, I believe, to energy efficiency standard or other requirement, energy efficiency standard or similar requirement. Now it's concerning energy use, energy efficiency. That's certainly reaching more broadly. Beyond that, we've talked about the exception for the bans on pool heaters, which I think shows coverage of bans. But on the kind of zero BTU a year energy use standard, is a ban a zero BTU energy use standard? I mean, I think that's a kind of logical conceptual question of, is there any operational difference between if the district had written the law as a zero BTU a year energy use standard or how it did? And if I can make one brief point on that, because I think where some courts trip up, and I know in the oral argument in the Second Circuit case, this was a major question of the judges were struggling with, well, how can we even have a, you know, zero standard? That's incoherent. How does it work? And I think this stems from a misunderstanding of how the test procedures work, because it seems that sometimes there's this understanding that you take your standard and then you run the test and see if the whatever product can run on, you know, zero energy. But that's not how it works. You run your product, you see how much energy it uses. It's going to spit out an energy use rating. Let's say it spits out, you know, 600 BTUs a year. Then you're going to compare that to whatever the standard is. So if the standard is 800 BTUs a year, great, product passes. If it's 100 BTUs a year, product fails. If it's zero BTUs a year, product also fails. So I think we could say that zero is harsh or unfair, but it's not incoherent. It's not impossible to apply or anything like that.
So you've brought a facial challenge to this district regulation. I'm wondering, why didn't you also or alternatively bring an as-applied challenge? Like, why is this a facial challenge?
Sure. So it's a facial challenge because of how the district wrote its law. The Clean Buildings Act prohibits gas combustion for the entire building, so it applies building by building. If the district had instead wrote the law to prohibit gas combustion for a list of appliances or a certain class of appliances, then I think that would be a very different issue, because there very well might be an application to one of those appliances that wouldn't be preempted.
But your fiction is that this is a regulation about appliances, or else EPCA wouldn't be in play.
Well, it's a regulation concerning the energy use or energy efficiency of appliances, but it does that by banning gas combustion at the building level. And so for the traditional facial challenge framework, the question is, well, is there any building that it can apply to? And the answer is no, because of how the district wrote its law. If it was an appliance by appliance test, then the answer very well might be yes, because I agree.
I want to understand this, because it seems to me that if you're saying that this, it seems to me that you are applying this to the covered products under EPCA, but you can apply the DC law to non-covered products, which you conceded in your filing in the district court. And I don't understand why that doesn't defeat a facial challenge.
Understood, Your Honor. Yes.
You can also apply it to covered products that are not gas powered, it seems.
I don't think it's, that's I think where the issue is, and what I believe I said in the district court was, you know, if you could apply this to just non-EPCA covered products, that wouldn't be preempted. I think that's a fairly uncontroversial proposition. The problem is, I don't know how to apply a building-wide combustion ban to just EPCA covered products or just non-EPCA covered products, because it applies, it's a binary on-off switch for the entire building. So I take the law as I find it. I apply it at the level that the district wrote it. So again, if the district had written this as a kind of appliance by appliance test or banning for a certain category of appliance, I think I would agree with large portions of your analysis. But because it's a building by building analysis, you can't kind of cut off gas combustion for one building, but then...
So I think what's confusing me about your answer is that it is sort of a building by building analysis and a more of a blanket kind of ban type analysis, which seems to indicate that it is not concerning energy use of covered products. Therefore, EPCA is just not, it's not about EPCA at all. There's no preemption issue, but you are trying to make it about EPCA by making it about the energy standards for appliances. And so it is, in your mind, about energy use of appliances for that purpose, but not for this purpose. And I don't know why it should be different.
Sure. So let me try to answer that, Your Honor. First of all, moving kind of up or down the regulatory chain and kind of making a regulation that will in directly achieve a preemptive purpose, I mean, that's preempted just as kind of a more direct regulation is. Here, the test is whether it concerns energy use or energy efficiency. It's not whether it kind of directly applies to EPCA covered products. It's not whether it's written as an appliance by appliance regulation. My only point here is that whether the district says you can't have any gas combustion in this building, or whether the district has said, you know, you can't use any gas appliance with over a 500 BTU a year energy use standard in this building, that's a regulation concerning the energy use, energy efficiency of the products. It has
why
a rather
the case that it matters how they said it, because in one case it would be preempted, in the other case it's not.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure if I've followed that question exactly.
I hear you to be arguing that it doesn't really matter how they say it. If it has this effect, then EPCA is implicated. And I'm trying to say I don't understand why it doesn't matter how they said it. Because if they said it in one way, it's clearly preempted. And if they say it in a different way, it's not.
Oh,
it's
I understand.
Not concerning energy use.
I understand. No. Yeah. So I think this might be misunderstanding my position, or we might just see it slightly differently. Okay. Which is that when I say if the district had written this as an appliance by appliance ban, what I mean there is it is possible to apply that in a way that would not concern an EPCA covered product. As in, if you're doing if the district had said, you know, these 20 gas appliances can't combust gas and five of them aren't covered by EPCA, that could be applied to those five. That would not be an EPCA preemption problem. But if the district instead says this entire building can't use any gas, then there's just no way to kind of parse out, well, this product can use it, this product can't. How the district wrote the law, its application simply isn't amenable to this appliance by appliance mechanism. Now, that doesn't really have anything to do with whether the law concerns energy use or energy efficiency of EPIC covered products, because again, even if the district had set a kind of building wide limit of 500 BTUs a year, 1,000 BTUs a year, choose your standard, you know, that would be operating building wide, but that would also clearly implicate the energy use, energy efficiency of EPIC covered products.
But is, to simplify, and tell me if this is a correct description of your position, that if a particular product meets the federal standards, the maximum energy use, then a city or a state can't or must allow it to be used. If it meets the federal standards, a city must allow it to be used.
No, Your Honor.
So I don't, your position?
I don't think that's quite my position. I think in many regulations that's going to be how my position sounds. But I want to draw a very important.
It's not how the statute sounds, which is why I'm asking the question.
In terms of regulations that a state or local government has that are, again, concerning energy use, energy efficiency, that are hinging on those, triggering on those, scaling based on those, then when there's an EPCA energy conservation standard, those aren't allowed. Now, if the preemption provision right doesn't say it preempts all regulations concerning EPCA covered products, right? And so that's important, and that should target the court towards looking at, is there some focus on energy use, energy efficiency, does it trigger, scale, all of that based on it. So it's not just, it's not some universal right to use, because there very well could be scenarios in which the city is regulating based on something that frankly has nothing to do with energy use, energy efficiency, that happens to result in some models of some appliances not being allowed to be used in whatever places. But the test there.
The DC statute doesn't have anything to do with energy efficiency.
It has quite a bit to do with at least energy use, Your Honor. It bans gas energy combustion, which is gas energy use. That is how gas appliances operate.
But in that answer, that answer depends on you ignoring the statutory definition. So we're back to where we were before.
Not at all, Your Honor. And I want to clarify that, because I don't want to be misunderstood on this point. Whether we're talking about energy use as in I use some energy when I turned on my gas stove, or energy use as in this product uses 500 BTUs a year under normal operating conditions, when you ban gas combustion, you are saying both you cannot turn on your stove, and you're saying you can't have any product with above a zero BTU a year energy use rating. So I actually think that is frankly equally applicable regardless of the meaning of energy use.
Could they have said there shall be no gas top stoves in any new construction?
No, Your Honor, because I think that would be saying you can't have a stove that uses gas energy in a building code. That's a zero BTU a year standard for gas stoves in a building code, which again, I think is kind of classic.
Kind of back to our first line of questioning.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying that there cannot be a ban.
There cannot be a ban. Use. Thank you, Your Honor. Yes.
That's really extraordinary to me. Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Roberts.
Good morning, Your Honors. Charles Roberts for the United States as amicus. I want to pick up where the questioning just left off, and I think actually on the other side of this case is an almost equally, if not greater or more extraordinary result, which is effectively nullifying 6297C. If a state or locality is able to effectively implement an energy conservation standard, is effectively able to ban the energy use of a covered appliance under EPCA, then we've simply provided the simplest path for any state or locality to evade preemption entirely. I think that's an extraordinary result that the court should also keep in mind as it's considering the sort of two competing positions here. If DC is permitted to implement this type of provision, then that is the functional equivalent of an energy conservation standard for gas products.
It seems to me that if Congress wanted to pass a law that says every building must be allowed to have a gas top stove, it could pass a law like that, I suppose. But to sort of try to backdoor it through this provision, which seems to just set energy standards for different appliances in order to avoid a patchwork set of energy standards all over the country, and to turn that into this provision that doesn't allow states to, you know, ban certain appliances if they think they use too much energy. That seems to me really beyond what the statute was trying to do. So it's not about not giving effect to the statute. It's about using the statute in a way that does not seem at all intuitively what the statute's trying to do.
Well, I think intuitively or on its face, the statute is about something broader than energy conservation standards. We know from the historical amendments to the statute that the current version of 6297C is getting at regulations that are broader than just energy conservation standards.
And why is it phrased this way? Why is it phrased in terms of covered products and energy efficiency, energy use, with energy use defined as in accordance with test procedures? And those test procedures go with use cycles per period. It's an ex ante measure of how much energy each of these products uses.
Sure. But if Congress had wanted to say states and localities cannot set energy conservation standards, that's a much simpler statute than 6297C is on its face. They use broader language. They use different language. First of all, energy use, energy efficiency are defined differently than energy conservation standard. And they use the broadening term concerning as well. So we know that we're working with something broader than just literal energy conservation standards. We also know that from the building code exception provision, as well as the state procurement standard provision. Those two don't necessarily involve energy conservation standards per se, or literal energy conservation standards, but they're accepted from preemption. So Congress expected them to be preempted. And therefore, what 6297C covers is a universe broader than literal energy conservation standards.
Your position is that if the federal standard for energy use is 100 kBTU, and a state went and imposed 50, that would clearly be preempted.
Yes.
Right. And that this statute or this DC law is the functional equivalent of that because it sets it at zero, right?
Yes.
Okay. There's one flaw in that argument that I want you to address, and that is that in the first hypothetical with the state setting 50, manufacturers would have to try to satisfy that in a different way than they can satisfy the federal standard, and that's why it's preempted. But when they say zero, that doesn't have any effect on the manufacturers designing the product at all. And the statute clearly was aimed, maybe not primarily, according to your view, but primarily aimed at the various differences between the states and localities and their regulation that caused these headaches for all the manufacturers. So, you know, you can address that.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. 2 points, at least, in response. I don't think a patchwork of bans is any more feasible or workable for Congress to be considering than a patchwork of energy use standards or energy efficiency standards. Manufacturers aren't able to comply with them here, aren't able to comply with them there, may be able to comply with them here, may be able to comply with them there. That patchwork problem still exists. But in the beginning of Your Honor's question about 50 BTUs versus zero, if that 50 is unattainable under current technology, or if it's 0.0001 and unattainable under any technology that we're ever going to have, I think that DC would have to admit still that is an energy conservation standard. So it can't turn on unattainability. It has to turn on concerning energy use. And if Congress had wanted to say no energy conservation standards by states and localities,
it was attainable.
Suppose it was attainable, then
still preempt.
Yes, you have something that's preempted. It could be higher than the federal standard. It's still concerning energy use. And we know that because it used to be the case that EPCA preempted only those that were stricter than the federal standard. And they broadened it in 1982. They broadened it, or 87, sorry, 1987, they broadened it to concerning energy use.
Yeah. Okay.
What is your position on, you know, a state or local fire safety regulation that says this, you know, a kerosene heater can't be used in a high-rise apartment building?
The first point is the one that my colleague made, which is there is no federal standard for kerosene lamps, and so they would not trigger preemption in the first instance. If there were such a standard, you would have to look at, what I would want to know is whether that fire safety code or building code operates on the energy use, the energy type directly. And it sounds like from Your Honor's hypothetical, it does. But if it operates on some other issue and only peripherally or incidentally impacts energy use, then we're less likely to be preempted. And that's the position of the Department of Energy going back to 1982 and regulations that they implemented interpreting EPCA at that point in history, saying that implemented them in 1982, saying that peripheral impacts on energy use or energy efficiency are not to be considered. And that's consistent with the Supreme Court's preemption case law as well. Roe versus New Hampshire uses the word peripheral, uses the word incidental, uses the word tenuous. If you have a regulation about fire safety that's really about fire safety and has incidental or peripheral impacts on energy use, then those are not a threat. And I think that dividing line, which is familiar to courts in federal preemption and supremacy clause preemption, is a useful guide and tool and a direct answer to the sort of parade of horribles that we see in a number of the cases, including the Second Circuit's case about state or local regulations that might be a threat. So decibel levels, regulations affecting the place where a particular EPCA covered product might be used. So affecting pools, that also has a peripheral effect on pool heaters, which are EPCA covered products, much less likely to be preempted than something that goes, like DC's here, to the core of energy use by regulating the type of energy that a product, EPCA covered product, can use.
Is the average use per year, does that have a geographic component?
Not that I'm aware of in the broader, in 6293 test procedures, which are the ones that are used to determine energy use and energy efficiency. I don't think that it has a geographic component to it. It has a...
Furnace in Phoenix, Arizona would have a different average use than one in Maine.
Yes, and it would have a different use than one turned on at the bottom of the ocean or on the moon. And so what we know is that Congress cared about these products and how they're actually used out in the world. It used the words representative average use cycle or period of use in the test procedures. And that's one among many pieces of evidence that Congress cared about how they're used out in the world, and negating that representative average use cycle or period of use, preventing that energy use entirely, has to be at the core of anything broader than just something that walks and talks and says, I'm an energy conservation standard. Anything broader than that has to sweep in that.
This case is that what DC has done is changed the average yearly use, not the BTU or anything else. It's just the average yearly use, and zero times whatever it is zero, whatever the BTU is.
Yes, I think if you accept the statutory definition, and even if you accept the Second Circuit and the Ninth Circuit dissent's views about point of use, you're still concerning energy use in this instance. And so I do think that the challenger's view of this as a zero KBTU standard is one way to simplify things. But if we are just applying the statutory definition, and I agree that is the court's task here, is figuring out which definition is appropriate and applying the statutory definition that EPCA provides, even then you're still affecting, concerning, changing the average use, average representative
use. But not energy use under the statutory definition. So the statute says that it's preempted for any covered product if the no state regulation concerning the energy, we'll say use, shall be effective. So it has to be about energy use for a covered product. And energy use is defined as the quantity of energy consumed determined in accordance with test procedures. So it seems that it's only preempted if it concerns this particular type of energy use, which is defined by this ex ante rating it gets based on testing in terms of how much it's going to use. And that is completely inconsistent with your theory. So I asked your compatriot the same question. So how does this statutory definition fit in with your interpretation?
I think it fits hand in glove. So energy use means the quantity of energy, and EPCA defines energy as fossil fuels in 6291.
Wait, 4. But determined in accordance with the test procedures. How do you?
That's what that was the exchange that I was just having with Judge Randolph about 6293 test procedures aimed to determine the average use cycle or period of use of an EPCA covered product, where it's used in the world, plugged in, turned on. And so what DC has prevented is that use, is that representative average use cycle or period of use. They have reduced the maximum quantity of energy permissible to be consumed by the consumer product at the point of use determined in those procedures to zero.
I don't see how that... Okay, I'm trying to understand like how that goes with the procedures. You're saying it just deals with energy use. Energy use is subject to procedures and therefore... it is affected, and that doesn't take into account the precise way in which this statute seems to want to use test procedures.
I think it does take it into account. I also don't think it necessarily needs to, because energy use is used in many different contexts throughout the statute. I think it is certainly consistent
but why
with
isn't
our
the better reading that which the Second Circuit adopted, which is that energy use for purposes of this statute is about whatever rating it is, as Judge Randolph mentioned, you know, that this product is going to use in accordance with these test procedures. And any state regulation that tries to change whatever that is determined by the test procedures, that is preempted.
I think that view of the statute doesn't take account of concerning and doesn't take account of the statutory history and doesn't take account of several other provisions in the statutory context that we address in our brief.
Concerning? It's concerning this type of energy use, and this type of energy use is that which is subject to these testing procedures and comes up with a number. And so you're only preempted if the regulation deals with that.
I think it does deal with that in an indirect way. It doesn't set that precise number and require manufacturers before a product leaves the manufacturing line.
But that's inconsistent with the definition of energy use.
I disagree, Your Honor, for the reasons that we've been discussing. I mean, the energy use of the product is determined in accordance with test procedures. And then what EPCA preempts is any regulation concerning that number. It doesn't only preempt regulations that set a fixed amount for energy use. It preempts any regulation concerning energy use. And so we know it's broader than just something that says the energy use label on a manufactured product needs to be X. It's something different.
I want to make sure I understand this. So I think we're, at least right now, we're operating in a shared understanding that energy use means the maximum amount of energy the product will use, right?
Yes.
So just in practical terms, it seems to me that what's going on here is that any manufacturer with, say, a gas stove that meets the federal efficiency standard can sell that in D.C., and it can be used in a lot of places in D.C. Where it can't be used is new or substantially modified buildings over 3 stories. Now, it seems just as a logical matter, your position is if it's used in a existing building, it has the energy use standard. It meets the federal standard, but somehow by saying you can't use it in the building across the street, you've altered the energy use capacity of that product. And that is fundamentally hard to compute for me.
I'm not sure if you've altered the energy use of the product. I think you have regulated concerning the energy use of the product. You have implemented a regulation that concerns the energy use of the product, whether it's in particular contexts.
And then it just sounds like it's ipsy dixit. DC could say, we are not regulating energy use. We are regulating the fuel type input. And you say, yes, but you're also regulating the energy use. And I mean, how do we choose between those?
I think that the Supreme Court and this court's precedents on federal preemption make clear that you need to be able to give effect to this standard, give effect to this preemption provision. And so making it so easy to evade that all you have to do is write it slightly differently, that path is foreclosed by a number of the Supreme Court precedents that we've cited in our brief, American Trucking Associations, Roe versus New Hampshire. They make clear that, I mean, as long as preemption's been around, states and localities have been trying to avoid it. We can't just give them the ability to do that simply by reframing the wording in their particular local provision.
Is there any evidence in the statute or the history that Congress was concerned with states and localities trying to ban particular covered products or fuel types in the 1980s?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I mean, these are of a recent vintage. And I mean, the Berkeley case is really the first one to address this type of state or local ban on an energy type in a federally covered product. And so I'm not sure if that was on Congress's radar. But what we do know is on Congress's radar, based on the statutory evolution, is something broader than just energy conservation standards. And as soon as we're in that realm, I'm not sure what the District of Columbia is going to be able to say is broader than an energy conservation standard, but short of what they're doing here.
Well, it would be direct and indirect efforts to get to implement a different conservation standard, like the building code with a maximum aggregate amount. But it's just not the very different type of thing that a ban is.
I don't think that a ban is very different when it sets the maximum quantity of fossil fuels that a product regulated by EPCA can use.
If I can just follow up on Judge Garcia's hypothetical, you agreed that, as he presented it to you, a product like a gas stove, which has gone through the testing procedures and has some energy standard assigned to it, has that same energy standard across all of the District of Columbia. And if there is a regulation that says you just can't have them in a particular location or a particular type of location, it's still the same energy standard in that location versus outside that location, or anywhere in the district, is the same energy standard. But you're saying that that regulation that says you just can't have that product at all in a particular location concerns the energy standard. I don't understand how that works.
It concerns the energy use, and we've exchanged.
But the energy use is the energy standard according to the testing procedures, et cetera. The energy use is a fixed thing for this product anywhere it goes. You've agreed with that premise.
Mm-hmm.
So how is a regulation that says you can't have this product at all in a particular location concerning the energy standard or the energy use, which is the standard?
Because it concerns the maximum quantity of fossil fuels that product can use, as determined in accordance with testing procedures. It's not that the state or local regulation needs to say that the manufactured number needs to be different.
You can't have it here means we're regulating the standard, which remains the same everywhere and is legal in other locations. That's your answer.
My answer is prohibiting the on-site fuel combustion for the provision of thermal energy to a building is a regulation, state or local regulation, concerning the energy use of EPCA-covered products in that location.
No, I understand that. And I'm trying to explore the implications of that when you're agreeing that it's the exact same energy use for that appliance everywhere. But if it's affected in one location, it becomes a regulation about energy use, even though the energy use is the same everywhere.
Yes, Your Honor. I think if you are regulating the maximum...
But do you see
maximum,
why that seems not correct?
No, Your Honor. I think that in one location, you are regulating to affect the maximum quantity of energy use, and maybe you're not doing it in another location, but it is a regulation still concerning. It's not the
so
word.
Basically, you are saying that any ban is a regulation concerning energy use because it sets everything to zero.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that if you are banning products from using a particular type of energy, or you're banning them from combusting to provide thermal energy to a building, then that's where we are. We're in the realm of
preemption. Why aren't you also setting this energy use to zero because you can't use it?
Sorry?
Any kind of ban, you're setting the energy use to zero because you can't use it. Because that is your whole argument, is it not? Like a ban is setting energy use to zero.
Yes. So in many instances, a ban will be sufficient to trigger preemption. But why isn't
any kind of ban setting energy use to zero?
Because some such bans are not concerning energy use. Some such bans, like I think my colleague posited a decibel limit, mm-hmm. is regulating concerning noise and the noise that a particular appliance.
But it's incidentally setting energy use to zero. So just like in Judge Garcia's hypothetical, the location is incidentally setting energy use to zero. Because the energy use is the same everywhere, but incidentally, in his hypothetical of setting energy use to zero.
I didn't take Judge Garcia's hypothetical to be to that effect. So if you were regulating pools and saying no pools in the District of Columbia, then pool heaters would be incidentally affected by that. That I don't think we would say would be preempted. If you're saying no pools and EPCA covered appliances that depend on pools to be used, that's incidental. And incidental is the dividing line in preemption cases, we agree. But if you're saying pool heaters cannot use gas, then you are regulating.
But if you want to say use. No pool heaters at public pools in DC because they use too much energy, they're not allowed to do that.
Well, there's a different exception from preemption for state procurement standards. So if the state wants to purchase
that aside,
we would be going to, I guess, private pools. And they said,
no, I'm just saying public pools. DC says no pool heaters at public locations because they use too much energy.
So not preempted because of the procurement standard exception. And then if that procurement standard exception did not exist, then that would be a regulation concerning energy use.
So that would be preempted.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Just remember. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Brian Leach for the District of Columbia. The fossil fuel provision of the Clean Buildings Act, I think as some of the questions have borne out this morning, regulates the type of energy that can be used in certain types of buildings in the district. To put it more succinctly, it regulates the source of energy that can be used in certain places, not the level of energy use or the level of energy efficiency of any product as it is manufactured to perform under controlled DOE testing procedures. My friend's contrary assertion struggles with the language of the statute as well as the structure and context and purpose. But as Judge Pan, you noted a number of times, it has the extraordinary consequence of leading to a situation where no state could ban a potentially dangerous product in certain types of areas solely because it would effectively set an energy use standard of zero. So we have examples of college dorm regulations, even in the district, ban cooking appliances in public college dormitories. That would be a zero energy standard under their theory. And I didn't understand any of their attempts to provide limiting principles. There is no text-based exception for proprietary uses. There is no landlord-tenant exception. There is no place within a building exception to EPCA preemption. All of these things would be clearly preempted by the plain language of the statute, and they can't square their theory with that result. And they can't provide any indication that Congress had that in mind when it enacted EPCA's preemption provision and refined it in 1987. I do want to make sure I note that the hypothetical that's gone around in many of the briefs and cases has to do with, well, is this effectively a zero energy standard? I want to make clear that this is not functioning like a zero energy use conservation standard. And the reason is even a hypothetical imaginary gas appliance that was rated at zero for energy use would still be banned because the mechanism for regulation under the district's law is the type of energy that's being used. And my friend noted the same idea. We're borrowing the language from the Second Circuit, which I think keyed in on this idea that when you're trying to determine whether or not a state regulation concerns the energy use of a covered product, you really want to know first, what is the mechanism for regulation? Do I have to know what the energy use standard for that product is in order to apply the law? For the district, we don't need to know anything about how the product actually performs under controlled testing procedures. If it uses a particular type of energy, it's banned. And you don't need to take my word for it. You can look at their complaint at JA 31 and 34. They describe the law as applying no matter the efficiency of the product, no matter the energy use of the product, no matter the energy efficiency of the product. And they have to describe it that way because that's the only plausible way to read it. It is a regulation of the source of energy. It is not a regulation of the amount of energy that any covered product is manufactured to.
It is a regulation, even under the statutory definition of energy use. Is it not?
It is not a regulation concerning the energy use of a covered. Not as
throughout the United States, to take dishwashers. The average use per year is 221 days, gas-wise. In the District of Columbia, under your law, the average use is zero.
That's not accurate, Your Honor. And I respectfully, the analysis of what the actual use of a product is not what energy use means under this statute.
Oh, yes, it is. That's how it's determined, by the average number of days the product is used by the BTUs that it consumes. And you multiply that out, you come to the energy use.
I'm not sure that's quite accurate as to how DOE considers a number of different factors when it is determining where to set an energy use standard. And it clearly would obviously consider.
I know there are other factors. I'm simplifying it, but it's the average number of days the product's used times the BTUs that are consumed in each use. And that is the part of the formula. But in DC, to take the dishwasher example, 221 days throughout the United States, except in the District of Columbia, the average use is zero.
Let me come at the question a different
way. Average daily use or the average yearly.
Even after the Clean Buildings Act goes into effect, the law's application will only cover new construction and substantially renovated buildings for only certain types of buildings. So existing structures, which are the vast majority of structures in the district, can still use gas appliances and gas dishwashers as much as they would like. And so it's an extraordinarily limited scope that we're talking about here. Yeah. But I also do want to clarify, though, that the way in which a standard might be formulated by DOE and the things it might consider doesn't change what the statutory definition of energy use is in the preemption provision. And we know that if we impute this idea of actual energy usage throughout the statute, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work in the preemption provision either, because there we're only talking about covered products with energy conservation.
It doesn't matter whether it changes the statutory definition, does it?
If we're talking about the actual use of a product in the hands of consumers, that would definitely change the definition of energy use. And I think my friends on the other side would agree. I understood them to concede that Berkeley was not actually applying the statutory definition. I think maybe a more accurate description is Berkeley was applying only part of it because it deleted the language essentially about determined in accordance with testing procedures. And that was led to a series of interpretive errors in that case. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it would change the definition. The definition is, as my friend noted, is a fixed standard that is a bar for manufacturers to meet when they are designing or manufacturing their products. Now, the difference here is, as I believe a number of questions have pointed out, no manufacturer is going to be changing their products based on the district's law. So at a common sense level, we know the district's law is not the kind of law Congress had in mind when it reenacted the preemption provision in 1987. It was really concerned about a patchwork of different state appliance efficiency requirements, not concerned about uses or regulations of energy type in different types of buildings. And I think some of the legislative history discussing the building code exemption really bears this out, because the House report, for example, refers to, I believe, that they did not want to preempt standard building codes or safety and heating and cooling codes. They didn't want to touch those. What they were looking at was trying to target regulations that might be in building codes that effectively require covered products to exceed the federal standard. Now, the distinction here is we're not requiring any covered product to exceed a federal standard at all. We're shifting demand from one set of covered products to another set of covered products, but no product is being required to be used that exceeds the federal standard. And so I do want to make sure I come back to there was a point about the waiver provisions. I think there's a real fundamental error that's being made about this, the impact of the waiver provisions on the meaning of the preemption clause at the outset. The problem with this analysis is with the waiver provisions, you know you're dealing right away with an already preempted regulation. And it's a method to allow states to enforce these laws despite the preemptive effect of 6297C. The impacts that you see discussed in D3 and D4, the problem with those don't allow for a reverse engineering of what the preemption provision covers, because there are preempted laws that will not have those effects, and there are non-preempted laws that will have those effects. State taxation laws could significantly burden manufacturing and servicing for appliances. trucking safety laws could substantially burden national transportation and distribution for covered appliances. There could be tort liability suits for design defect claims that could substantially burden these things. No one would think those are preempted. So the fact that a law, in their view, might have that effect of what's being described in D3 and D4 doesn't provide any clue to what the scope of concerning the energy use of the covered product would
have
be.
Have you thought about B4, which, as the home builders referenced, is the provision that says, regulations concerning energy use are preempted, but not, here's an exception for pool heaters using a constant burning pilot. And they would say that shows you Congress expected bans on particular types of products to be preempted. And here's one exception from that preemption of bans.
So a few thoughts, Your Honor. The first is that our position is not that bans are never preempted. There could be a ban, like I think they propose a different, if it was a ban that said no product, no gas product below 100 BTUs per year, that would be preempted because the mechanism for regulation is the energy standard for the product, not just that it's a ban. The second point I want to make is that I think this is maybe the trickiest part historically about the statute. So pool heaters were added to EPCA in 1987, and that's when this pool heater exception for pilot lights was added. There were many states that had begun to ban pilot lights on pool heaters because of serious safety concerns. And so it may have been a belt and suspenders approach of just like, let's ensure that these states know that their existing bans on pilot lights for pool heaters will not be preempted. I think it's difficult to infer much more than that. But even if you accept that pool heater pilot lights or banning a certain product feature might lead to preemption, it wouldn't change the analysis in this case because that example doesn't suggest that EPCA would preempt laws that regulate on the axis of energy type and energy source. A pool heater, in that example, for example, if you take a ban on pilot lights with pool heaters, you're banning a product feature that does require manufacturers to go back to the drawing board because now they have to redesign their products to have an ignition device, not a constant burning pilot light. That might be the kind of law Congress had in mind. But when you have a law like this, where we're regulating solely along the basis of energy type and energy use in certain locations, you don't have that kind of issue. And it is not a regulation that is getting at something indirectly that we can't do directly. The cases that they're referring to, like Roe versus New Hampshire or American Trucking, are cases where the regulation was, instead of targeting motor carriers directly, it was switching to targeting shippers or retailers, people who were using the services of the motor carriers. Or it was someone who it was targeting the motor carriers, but imposing penalties on another party in the contract. That's American Trucking. But the mechanism for regulation in those cases was still the services of the motor carriers. In Roe, it was the delivery procedures of the motor carriers. It was just imposing the regulation on shippers. We're not regulating either side of the transaction for buying or selling gas products. People can still buy and sell gas products and gas appliances in the district after this law goes into effect the same way they can today. There's just a limitation on the use of a particular energy source in certain types of places.
So would it, this gets at, I want to know what your rule is. Would the outcome be any different if DC had just said no more gas appliances?
No, I don't think it would. And the reason goes back to what I was mentioning earlier and what my friend also, I think, acknowledged, which is that you want to look at first the mechanism for regulation. What is the basis for regulating on this issue? Do I need to know what the energy performance or standard is for this product in order to apply the law? Now, with a law that just bans gas products throughout the district, all you need to know is what type of energy it uses. You don't need to know anything about what the number on the label is or how it's been tested. And as a result, that is not the kind of regulation that falls within the scope of 6297C. I do want to mention there was a discussion about the use of statutory definitions. Now, the UARG case, which my friends on the other side cite, is an example where the term air pollutant was used throughout the Clean Buildings Act, but it was used almost more often than not outside of the statutory definition. And so that was a case where the court said, look, we can't make sense of this program if we apply the act-wide definition here to include any air pollutant. This is a case that's much more like Kurtz, right? Where Kurtz, which we cited in our brief and they did not respond to, where there was a definition of person in the federal, the FCRA, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and it was construed, even though it was involving a waiver of sovereign immunity, it was still construed to include the federal government, even though that definition made no sense in another provision that would have imposed criminal penalties on the United States, which everyone knows it could not have worked in that one instance. Nevertheless, the Supreme Court still followed Kurtz because it said, look, our job is to apply the statutory definitions that Congress gives us. We're not here to rewrite the statute in order to fit one particular subpart of an overall scheme that threatens to jeopardize the coherence of the scheme overall. My friend mentioned that the Second Circuit, he suggested the Second Circuit did not address his zero BTU argument. I don't think that's quite accurate. It addressed it in a different way. It addressed it when it was discussing whether a regulation of energy use is a proxy or equivalent to an energy conservation standard. That was where they were addressing the argument. And they said, look, as we quoted in our brief, a regulation of energy use is not a proxy for an energy conservation standard because it is not equivalent to that. An energy conservation standard in its traditional form is a manufacturing-facing regulation. It is a product-specific, numerical, quantitative performance metric that is imposed on manufacturers in order to sell their products. The further you get away from a product-specific, numerical, quantitative standard, the less likely it is going to be functioning like one. And here, there's nothing numerical or quantitative about the district's law. It is qualitative. It is about the type of energy and the source of the energy that's being used. It does not matter what the label says on the product.
I think you gave this a version of this answer at the beginning, but just to make sure we have it, do you think that the effect of this law is any different from a law that said any gas appliance in these buildings must have a zero energy use?
Yeah, I do think the effect is different. I think anytime you're talking about a numerical quantitative standard, even if it's zero, we think that that probably would be an energy conservation standard that on its face would probably be preempted. The difference is our law would ban even the hypothetical gas appliance with the zero energy use standard on the label. And part of this goes back to something that we noted in our brief and they did not respond to, which is the warranty provision in EPCA 6297G, which says that the energy disclosures about energy use, meaning the energy use labels, are not a warranty for how the product will actually perform under conditions of actual use. And so even though a product is rated at a certain number on the label, it doesn't guarantee that it's not actually going to use a different amount in practice. And so, again, we are removing the quantity issue entirely from the district's regulation. So we're not looking, so as they said in their complaint, no matter the efficiency, no matter the energy use, no matter the energy efficiency of the product, it can't be used for this particular type of fuel. And EPCA itself draws this distinction between the kind of fuel a product uses and the quantity of its energy use. And we pointed this out, it's pages 22 to 23 of our brief. They did not respond other than a footnote in their reply. And there isn't really a response to this point because EPCA makes clear in its structure that the kind of energy a product uses is not the level of its energy efficiency. And it's also not a performance-related feature under EPCA. So the distinction we're drawing here is not an arbitrary one. It is grounded in EPCA itself. And the fact that DOE doesn't have authority to regulate types of energy is all the more reason for states and localities to be able to do it. DOE is a creature of statute. State and local governments are not. And there's a lot of things that DOE cannot do under EPCA that states and localities can. For instance, DOE can't set design requirements for a lot of different products. States and localities certainly can. DOE can't regulate products that aren't listed as covered products or that it doesn't designate as such. States and localities certainly can. So there's nothing unusual about the idea that the state or local government is doing something that DOE might not be able to do. I also wanted to mention that Judge Pan, you noted there's symmetry in the definition, and we pointed this out in our brief, and this is something the Second Circuit also picked up on. There's a symmetry to the structure of the definition for energy conservation standard and the preemption provision itself, and it goes to the historical development of the statute as well. The reason it's structured the way it is now, it's streamlined a bit from what it had previously been. My friends are correct. But the reason it's structured the way it is now is because in 1987, the term energy conservation standard was introduced into the statute, and its definition was broader than what energy efficiency standard had been. It now included design requirements for certain types of products. Congress broke out the constituent components of the performance standard element of the definition of energy conservation standard in order to avoid preempting design requirements for those particular products. And it did so, you know, for a number of reasons, but, you know, a lot of them make a good deal of sense. If you read the structure of the statute differently, you're potentially preempting a host of different product liability suits. Congress clearly didn't intend to do that. And so we think that the appropriate historically grounded reading of EPCA is the one we've offered in our brief and that the Second Circuit picked up on as well. If there are no further questions, I'm happy to see the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Do you reserve rebuttal time? We'll give you some rebuttal time.
Yes.
We'll give you 3 minutes.
2 minutes. Thank you, Your Honor. I have two brief points. One, I think in response to a question that Judge Garcia asked me during my opening about what else do we have from the statute to kind of tell us that EPCA is interested in bans, I did leave out, I think, one very important provision. That's 6297D4. This is the waiver provision. This allows the Department of Energy to waive preemption in certain circumstances, but there's some guardrails on that. And the Department of Energy specifically cannot waive preemption if the regulation is likely to result in the unavailability in the state of any covered product type or class with those performance characteristics. So I think it's important here that Congress thought about, well, are we going to allow the department to waive preemption if it's going to result in this type of product, this, you know, gas stove or what have you, being unavailable in the entire state? So it's at least an effective ban, regardless of whether it takes the form of the ban. And Congress thought it was so important that, look, it specifically prohibited DOE from exercising his otherwise fairly broad discretion. Second point I want to make is I think my friend on the other side, if I heard him correctly, conceded that the district could not have a Clean Buildings Act that said only appliances with a zero BTU a year energy use rating are allowed. And I think that's a rather extraordinary concession because preemption turns on the operation and effect of the statute. In an operation and effect, a zero BTU a year standard saying you can't combust, saying you can't use gas appliances, those are all the same things. And so you're really having this turn on
semantics.
But do you
have a response to his argument that this is not what his law is doing, that the district's law is doing something different, so you just can't even use this type of energy at all? So it's, even a zero would fail their statute because it's you can't use it at all. There's no numerical, standard attached to what they're doing. What's your response?
Sure.
To that?
On that, the only appliances that are going to meet a zero BTU a year standard are those that don't use gas, right? If we're measuring appliances based on gas energy specified in BTUs, then
but
only electric
appliances
will make
them. They're not
setting
it to zero because even zero would fail. There's no gas, period.
Appliances don't think it's not true that zero would fail. I mean, you can certainly use appliances in those buildings. You just can't use any appliances that use any quantity of gas. And so in that sense, while, look, I understand it's an extreme standard, it's a harsh standard, maybe it's an unfair standard, but it's a standard of how much gas you can use. Just rather than saying you can use 1,000 or 10,000 or what have you, you can use none at all.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted.